Welcome to Manager Tools. When a direct says no repeatedly to feedback, part three. This cast answers these questions. Do directs have to accept feedback? What do I do if a direct says no to feedback? What if a direct says no to feedback repeatedly? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
It's about that time of year again. New Year's resolutions are about to creep up on us. Maybe you're like us, and you use the new year to recommit to personal processes. Consider using Roadmap. It tracks your Manager Tools Trinity behaviors and monitors the strength of your relationships by supporting you in the Trinity rollout process. Use it to get back on track with one-on-ones or feedback, or to jumpstart your coaching process and delegate more. It's the perfect time to focus on your personal process and make sure that it'll support you through the coming year. Buy a personal license with Roadmap on the website at www.manager-tools.com.
All right, dude, we're on part three. This is longer than we both expected, but well worth it, I think. So let's get right to it. We've already talked about, you know, our point one, it is okay to say no to feedback, but we talked about and made the case that directs do have a core obligation to accept feedback.
Yeah.
So they don't get to go forever. I'm not saying no. They can say no.
I would also say in response to the, just finish up the idea of the, in the second bullet, is that the single biggest assault on the idea that directs do not have an obligation to accept feedback today is a tangential, indirect one, oblique one, to take your choice of words there, is this idea that how employees feel is the purview of the organization. I'll give you a good example. I feel triggered. And so by definition, someone saying, I feel triggered, this is irrespective of what behavior they were confronted with, is cause for HR involvement, because we don't want people feeling triggered. That could lead to loss of productivity on their part. But I've actually had a conversation with somebody at a huge, major, well-known company, and they felt triggered because their boss said, I'm going to be using a new way of giving feedback, performance communications, just to make it easier for you and I to know when we're having those conversations. And I'm going to ask you, and it's okay to say no. And the person in the meeting said, I feel triggered by this. I don't want to be a part of this. And he says, well, it's not optional. It's part of your job. And he got talked to by HR. And it took him about a week to get somebody high enough in the chain of command to tell HR to go away. So the point being that from a professional perspective, that direct who complained might very well have said, yes, I understand that I, at some level, that I have to be open to feedback from my boss, but not if I don't like the way it comes to me, not if I don't like my boss. Well, those things don't matter, guys. I'm sorry to burst everybody's happy little bubble, but whether you like your boss or not, I'm not saying that gives us an excuse to be a bad boss, whether you like your boss or not, or whether you like the method of it or not, assuming it's within the realm of decency, you can't scream epithets at people, you can't insult people while telling them they're doing their job poorly, you know, you're required. But HR gets involved because they have this sense of, oh, well, somebody got triggered, and we certainly need to be on the lookout for that. But what that means is people just feel triggered, and there's no definition of what is a trigger. It's simply a feeling other people have. So that's the biggest assault on this now. So if you're in a high trigger warning organization, I could see where it would be more likely for you than the average manager in the world today to be sensitive to someone who says, yeah, I don't want to buy into this. They're wrong, but that doesn't mean HR won't protect them. So enough about that. When you get worried, you got to start making notes.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. So yeah, if it's gone too long, they keep on, right, saying no.
Yeah. What do we do to carry out our obligation to deliver society's feedback to our team members, but our team members reject it? That's really what this, we're getting down to the brass tacks. The first rule is don't worry. Okay. As I've said a million times before on the show, worry is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. So worry is not an effective managerial tool or a professional tool or a career tool. So don't do it. And it's okay to feel like you're worried and then to say, no, this is not effective. I'm going to stop feeling this way. And I'm going to go further. The first or even the second instance of someone saying no might just be a good example of the direct having a bad day or two. Okay. Let it go. Don't worry about the first no. If you get worried about the first no, then this model is not sustainable for you because the model requires you to ask, hey, can I give you some feedback? And it requires you to be honorable about the very nature of a question, which is you have to appreciate the answer. Otherwise, you wouldn't ask. You just say, I have some feedback for you, which we don't recommend because our model works better when we've tested it. But look, I mean, managers have made two fundamental mistakes when it comes to performance communications over the years relative to frequency and currency of feedback. One is too many managers wait too long until there's a, quote, pattern, unquote, of behavior after the direct is done many times. And then we need to have a conversation about this issue. And it's serious and it scares people. And almost everyone who's been through one of those says, boss, please tell me sooner. You know, I want to know. The other thing is the moment something happens, making it into a big deal, as opposed to just that was human frailty. It was a human error. I didn't see that coming. I should have known better. You're right. Big picture. I forgot the software change and I'd used the old version. And so we have an error, whatever the case. But look, guys, almost no first instance of anything ever is the start of a pattern. When it comes to human behavior, okay, it's just an aberration. It's an instance. It's a fluke. Let it go. One is not a pattern. And I'll go further. One is not a pattern. And one is not the start of a pattern. Okay? It's a datum. The start of a pattern is two. Okay? But if the start of a pattern is one, then technically zero is the start of a pattern. Because the pattern requires repetition, and there's no repetition in one. And you got to be, I mean, you talk about the old, you know, there's the old saying, every cloud has a silver lining. Some people go through their professional lives thinking every silver lining has a cloud, and by God, I'm going to be the one that finds it. And the idea that one is a pattern is just incredibly inefficient thinking. That would then suggest that every time a customer complains, shut it down. Cut that product, get it out of the stores right now. So when one thing happens, let it go. In fact, we have a podcast about this called Feedback Grace Period, right? When you see something that isn't great, let it go. And guess what? The person who made the mistake probably knows it's a mistake and they'll self-correct. I mean, you can't sit there and say as a manager, you know, by the way, I'm special. And I correct my mistakes, but everyone around me, they are incapable of doing that. And so I must help them by pointing out all of their errors. I got to tell you, that makes you a really bad boss really fast. The elimination of all errors is not success. A boss who attempts to eliminate all errors will be rewarded with an exceptionally high turnover rate. So you continue to do your job when you notice something, an instance, and you don't want to give feedback, fine. So you ask to give feedback and they say, no, let it go. Okay. When another instance occurs where feedback is required, deliver this second, what would be the second had it not been, it may have nothing to do. The behavior in instance two here may have nothing to do with the behavior in one. One may have been an issue of raising their voice in a meeting. I know that's a bad example, but bear with me. And the other one has to do with an incorrect expense account. Okay. But the second time we ask after the first one is refused, we deliver the second one, the second question, hey, can I give you some feedback? As if the first refusal never happened. Because otherwise, you're implying a pattern, and we don't want to do that. And remember, feedback is about small stuff, okay? And you might want to have paid attention because they may have refused your offer of performance communication when you asked them. And let's assume that the offer was negative, right? We didn't say it. It had to be negative. You could actually ask them to intend to give them positive feedback and have them say no, not realizing it's positive. It would be funny, actually, if you said, actually, it's positive, and have them say, oh, okay. And that would give you a little bit of a red flag to pay attention to. But they may have refused your question, said no at the time, bad timing, whatever, bad day. But you might also notice that they've changed their behavior anyway.
Oh, lucky you.
I mean, which is, again, that's like a self-licking ice cream cone. I don't even need to give feedback, but things magically get better because it's perceived that I'm paying attention and because I have smart, good people who are trying to be better all the time. So the second time, act as if their response is an aberration. Okay? Don't be afraid to look for another opportunity to give them feedback. We get plenty of emails here from managers that say they've tried to give feedback, gotten one refusal, and say they're worried about a pattern. Again, one is not a pattern. And a pattern is just so unlikely, guys. This just only happens one out of every 10,000 managers. Not 10,000 directs, 10,000 managers. Now look, if you're wondering how long you should wait, how long should you stay frosty? How long should you not get worried? Okay, that's the point of this, the whole point of this agenda item is when you get worried. So how long is it before I should get worried, right? This is like I tell Wendy every once in a while. Wendy says, am I in trouble? And I say, no. Do you know why? And she says, yes. And I say, why? And she says, because when I'm in trouble, you'll start a conversation with me that says, you're in trouble. And you haven't said that. I said, that's exactly right. And so you're not in trouble. And she's like, oh, okay. I feel better. I said, well, good. I don't know why me saying to you, you're in trouble, and the absence of that means you're not in trouble. And you know me, I'm very clear about these kind of things. I think about performance communications all the time. But for some reason, for some people, if I say the absence of being in trouble means no communication, I'm talking about serious trouble, somehow they consider that to be not enough, and they must be communicated about the absence. But regardless, the first and second time, and three or four times, okay? If you get to three or four times in succession, I'm not talking about three or four times a year interspersed with other instances where they say yes, but I'm saying three or four times in the course of 1 or 2 weeks where you're trying to give them feedback, and every time you try 3 to 4 times in a row, they continue to say no. Again, not all the same day, not all at the same time, not all in one-on-one. At that point, there might be a systemic problem. There probably isn't. I would say there isn't, but there might be. So at that point, start making notes about what you're trying to give feedback about. And you'll notice I don't say you need to start documenting. We have an entire podcast about documenting. It's stupid. It's one of those. It's just this big red herring. Oh, why are you documenting? You really don't know what you're talking about, do you? So don't get overwrought about what, quote, notes, unquote, are. You don't need an MFR, Mike Fox Romeo, a memorandum for record. You don't need to send emails to yourself so there's proof that your note is timely.
But for God's sake, don't do it on Post-it notes.
Why? What are you saying? Why are you disagreeing? Oh, I see. Okay. I'm sorry. Mike is being the street man. I'm sorry.
That was a straight guy leading in.
Yes. I my comic timing leaves a lot to be desired.
Oh, my. Thanks for blowing my cover, dude.
Yeah, no, dude, I literally, I'm like, wait, that's exactly what I was going to say, Post-it notes. And I use Post-it notes as an example to say, we live in the real world. You don't have to go 13 layers deep into your company's intranet to find the form that HR says you have to fill out. That's a waste of time, dudes. Don't do that. No offense to HR. My point is, I respect that you created the form, I don't think you understand how busy managers are that they have to go find it.
At Managers, we don't believe that the first time you talk to somebody about poor performance is when you're getting ready or you've decided that you are going to fire them 2 months later, right?
Yeah, and you should have known better.
Right.
Yeah, right? That's my guidance to you for your future career. You should have known better.
Everybody knows that.
Yes, of course. So short, abbreviated notes on yellow post-it notes, on yellow sticky notes, even ones only you can decipher, are sufficient. Sufficient for you, sufficient for the conversation, sufficient for court, if heaven forbid it gets there, and it won't.
Yeah, I remember like way back, it's been a number of years. Folks, if you haven't been listening forever, if you have been listening forever, you would know that Manager Tools kind of start, at least the idea, the genesis of Manager Tools was that Mark consulted for me back, I don't know, I think at the time I had a 600-person IT organization, maybe something like that. And you consulted with me, for me, and we implemented what is now known as the Manager Tools Trinity. It wasn't called that at the time. It's called Mark Horsman's Trinity, I think, or something like that.
Horsman
Academy. Right? Yeah. And long story, you'd ask me if I was doing one-on-ones, and my folks said, sure, I was doing one-on-ones. And then you came and sat in on one of my one-on-ones, and you go, dude, that's not a one-on-one. That is you simply telling your directs what you want from them. That's not a one-on-one. I said, well, I get what I want, so why was bad about that? Anyways, it's a long story. But you showed me your one-on-one notebook, and it was this black book, and on the front of it were all these yellow sticky notes. And from where I was, I couldn't read the writing. I said, dude, what is, you have like 50 post-it notes on that. What is that?
Yeah. So I would make a note when I was at my desk about some feedback I needed to give or something I need to cover. And I would stick them on the front of the one-on-one notebook. And then every time I opened the notebook, I'd look on the front for somebody who worked for me. And I would take the ones out relative to them and I'd stick them on their one-on-one form. On the one-on-one, in the one-on-one page for that week. And either I would check it off indicating I had delivered it, or if it wasn't checked off, I had not delivered it. If I had given you the feedback, I would write it on a yellow post-it note or on a scrap of paper and paperclip it to it. And I put a check on it, meaning I've delivered it. But if it didn't have a check, when I came to the one-on-one, I would deliver the feedback. And to go a step further, I actually testified in court. 7 times I've testified. And defending clients for their behaviors regarding wrongful terminations. And in every single case, we won. And in every single case, managers were documenting, stupid word, their feedback using what is known as contemporaneous notes, not formal notes, not memorandums of record, not emails to yourself, or heaven forbid, to somebody else, but simply contemporaneous note-taking. And note-taking is what you take notes as, which could be on a yellow sticky note. And it doesn't have to be legible.
You submitted them in little yellow, or little clear plastic bags with each little yellow sticky in its own bag.
No. You just take a, you Xerox a copy of the one-on-one form with the yellow sticky notes on it. And it's very clearly, if you've ever Xeroxed a one-on-one a piece of paper with yellow sticky notes or sticky notes on it, you could tell by the size of it, what's there.
Yeah, and for the record, when you first shared this with me, I thought you were absolutely crazy. It was just like absolutely nuts.
I spent a number of years being people thinking I was nuts, but it was like I had a royal flush. I had all the cards. I had all the data. People are like, no, that won't work. Yeah, how come it won't work? Because nobody's ever done it that way before. Actually, I know several thousand people that are doing it this way, but you know.
Yeah, and the only reason I share this story, folks, I'm sorry we've gone too long. I don't mean to sidetrack us, but for those of you like me who are high C's, like you just got to have a detailed process. And God, the idea that you don't have a neat spreadsheet with all the stuff just drives you absolutely crazy. The problem is when it comes to feedback, if you create that hurdle to accomplishing feedback, you'll never do it.
Yes.
And the answer is just to do it in the easiest, simplest way you can. And if writing it on yellow sticky notes is the way to do it, then do it and you'll be fine.
Yep. Totally fine. Yeah. By the way, I'm going to take us back to the past, Mike, again, since you brought it up. I just poured some coffee in my coffee cup, and I know somebody's going to write in and say, and they're probably going to try to give me feedback. Hey, Mark, can I give you some feedback? And they always then completely bollocks it up because they shouldn't give me feedback because they're not my boss. And second of all, you certainly shouldn't do it in writing. But she, then they're going to write in print.
And they should wait for you to say yes.
Answer assumed. I'm like, you, okay. Anyway, and they said, when I hear you pouring coffee during your podcast, it makes me think you're distracted and not fully engaged in the podcast. I said, well, okay. But, you know, it's 10:30 in the morning on a Friday. And I've been up since 4:30. And I'm on my second pot of coffee. And if I don't have the coffee, and by the way, of those, what, 6 hours I've been up, five of them I have been on Zoom calls or on the phone with Mike. And so I make no apologies, folks. Please don't ask me to not drink water or coffee when my job, literally, I think, is to talk. And I don't, I actually, my throat is dry. And I have a heater on, which makes it worse in the house.
We've got a conference for everybody ready for sign up today at manager-tools.com/training, from individual contributor to executive, whether you learn best virtually or in person, if your team's co-located or works remotely. I assure you, there's a Manager Tools conference to meet your needs.
Okay, back to work, boss. So formality doesn't matter, okay? Don't wait a month and write a long note about all the refusals you got. That will not help you if it gets worse, okay? A memorandum for record at the end of every month will absolutely carry no weight if it goes to a more serious conversation. When you go to HR and you say, here are the 9 times, here are the dates and everything, they're going to say, what's that? Look, after the first couple, here's the way I deliver feedback. After the first couple, you know, I started paying attention and I just started making some notes because I thought I need to give him space. He may not be ready right now. It's okay. He may be going through a difficult time. That's okay. I'm all right with that, but I'm still responsible for his performance. And so I was just making some notes, never dreaming it would get to this where I think he thinks that he can take advantage of the system. But to be clear, I haven't answered that. But I just want you to know that this is not a one-off. I'm not a manager who panics. I'm a manager who has a plan, who communicates the plan to everybody. Everybody in my team knows this is the model that I use. I communicated the plan. I started the plan. Everyone else is thrilled with it. And the only person who has significantly refused is this person. And here's all the times they've refused. Now, look, HR's mouth is going to hang open. Sorry, they are. And if you want the best story I've ever heard in my professional life, listen to one of our all-time favorite casts, the Corky story, C-O-R-K-Y. That's like Corky in a bottle of wine. That's the name of a person who worked for somebody who used to work here, Danny Martin, who was just a huge, marvelous part of our team. We miss her every day. And Danny tells a story about how she used all of our systems and processes to get rid of a difficult, underperforming employee whose name was Corky. And it was masterful. I mean, not only is it just a great explication of what we teach regarding someone who won't improve, Danny's use of it was so patient. Basically, it's like being the house in Las Vegas. That's the way Danny approached it, which is, you're going to beat me every once in a while. You're going to think you got over on me. But, you know, it's like that sign outside of a casino I drove by once in the mountains of Colorado. We return 95% of our patrons' money to them. Like, yeah, so you keep 5%, right? So I'm paying to come in there. I'm not going to, there's a chance I'll come out ahead, but the chances are actually not that good, right? And Danny knew that she had in her back pocket a system that was infallible, and then she proceeded to use it. And when she finally went to HR, it was fait accompli, done. And I won't reveal the rest of the story, but there are some interesting additional points of data regarding this particular person that made the story really powerful. Anyway, so what's most important here is that you capture on your note their behavior, which you ought to know how to do because you know the feedback model surely by now, and what you intended to mention as a result of what they did. You need something written down, both about their behavior and the consequence. Now, what would be great is there will be a couple of positives in there. In fact, I would encourage you to start looking for positives when this occurs. So if, in fact, they have decided to go, you know, whole hog and say, I refuse, right? I resist. You will have examples of positive feedback they refused. And the positive feedback examples, once you're worried enough to start taking notes, as if you will, if in fact they slip and decide to say yes, and you give them positive feedback, they're probably going to look at you and say, oh, I thought it was going to be negative. So no, why would you think that? I didn't ask you, can I give you negative feedback? I just said, can I give you feedback? And I look for good and bad. And when I see good, I point it out. And when I see bad, I point it out. Look, we're doing this for two reasons. During the conversation we're going to have with them, and we're going to get to that in a minute, but at the top of the show, we already told you what to say. You're going to go over all the feedback they refused. Okay? Now, to be clear, you're not going to ask them again, can I give you some feedback, and run the risk of them saying no. We'd be back at the beginning again. That wouldn't make sense. Look, since we have an obligation to give feedback, in this case, we're going to give it without our question, because we'll have laid out our case for why they're obligated to accept it. The second reason, though, is at some point, HR or some, I think we've made this point, but I'll just be clear, someone more senior might get involved. Regrettably, as much as we love HR here, too many HR folks see their role as a sort of a quasi-union rep for employees. And they think that when an employee complains, by definition, HR must go and investigate the manager. And I've met too many HR people who in their heart of hearts think that their job is to correct manager behavior because a direct came to them expressing stress or concern or worry or triggering or whatever. And that's not HR's job. In fact, HR should be much more on the side of managers, but I respect the difficult situation they're put in many, many cases. And there are HR people who further think that individual contributors should be able to choose how they receive feedback. Now, HR doesn't say that about performance reviews. They don't see it about mentoring programs. They don't say it about pay. They don't say it about meetings, but they do about feedback, which is weird. So you'll want good records of what happened. Now, for some reason, in our experience, just sharing our experience, 30 years here doing this, those more senior people who have gotten involved in silliness like this seem to be notably impressed, not just with the behavior, but also the consequences of the behavior, right? So when you write down both parts of it on your notes, try role-playing that conversation in your mind with somebody more senior where you're just ticking off some behaviors. You're saying, oh, he did this, and he did this, and he did this, and he did this. As opposed to, you mentioned the date and the behavior and the consequence in each instance. What you'll find is you'll come across totally more persuasive about the strength of your case and the weakness of your direct's case. Not that we're making a case. And that's all you need. And it is completely sufficient for later legal discussions. And it won't get that far, so you don't have to worry. But if you're worried about that, if you're prone to worry, I promise you, this is all you need, because I've been there 7 times, and we're 7-0.
Yeah. Now, there's a really important point about taking notes about what you're writing down. Mm. And we recommend that you focus on behavior. Right. That's the key.
I said that, but you're right to point it out because we see this all the time when we are training people, when we get seriously involved in the development of a hiring process for a company, and we train individual managers on interviews, and then we make them do mock interviews to prove they've learned the technique. And we've told them, you must only write down the things people say in the interview. And they say, well, no, I want to write down my feelings. No, you don't. First of all, One of the things that happens is feelings, capturing feelings in interviews is a form of, but will create the possibility for bias propagation, okay? Behaviors aren't biased, okay? If you write down what the person said and what they said they did, you're capturing raw data. There's no bias in that. You might as well show somebody a videotape or let them listen to an audio tape. If, however, you capture your feelings about that, you run the risk that your feelings to one person would be different than the feelings to another your feelings toward another person, when in fact they both engage in the same behavior. So we capture their behavior, what they did. And if you don't know what we're talking about with behavior, guys, if you're just joining us, we've been doing this for 15 years. I don't know. We have 1,000 podcasts out there, and we have a series of podcasts called the Manager Tools Basics, in which we'll teach you the basics of one-on-ones and feedback and coaching and delegation. And this is an outcropping of our thematic work on feedback.
And folks, I've learned so much from Mark over the years, but one of the most fundamental, impactful things that Mark ever shared with me was this idea of thinking about behaviors. It is stuck with me for 20 years. It's important. We don't have time to go into it here, but man, it's impactful. And when you start thinking about behaviors, as opposed to how you feel or what you think they're thinking, man, life gets a lot easier.
Yeah. Actually, Mike, it's funny you mentioned that. I'll just tell you, I got an email this morning from a frequent correspondent to Things I Think regarding behavior. And the person wrote, this is somebody who I think of as really, you know, pretty knowledgeable about our world, about management and professionalism and so on. And this person was responding to, gosh, something I said about behavior. I had written, the title of the bit was, honestly, I don't get it. This isn't Things I Think I Think. And I said, why is it everyone else talking about management can't seem to get around to talking about behavior? Motivation, strategy, attitude, intent, emotions, all interesting, certainly popular, but not determinative, or one of my favorite words, dispositive. And the emotion thing, it's getting worse and it won't end well. And it's not like this is new, meaning, of course, the focus on behavior. Then I provide a quote. We become just by performing just actions, temperate by performing temperate actions, brave by performing brave actions. That's Aristotle. He died 2,000 years ago. The idea that behavior, the concept of behavior and its fundamental underpinning in the human condition is different. But no one is talking about it but us. No one. And all this talk about feelings, all this talk about ideas and intent and attitude and motivation, people start talking about motivation, folks, run for the hills. There is no motivation other than self-motivation. None. And you're not going to get very far if you think your job is to motivate other people. You will be able to motivate probably significantly, you'll be able to motivate 15% of the people who work for you. It's a general rule. If you're lucky, you have a lot of people just like you, and your number will get as high as 30%. But that ain't a way to be successful, to only be able to reach 15 to 30% of your people. All right, so look, we pay attention to the behavior. Look, the more you pay attention to behavior, the easier it will be to see or hear the behavior you're looking for to change. And perhaps it is changing. And that's good. And look, if you see a change, don't hesitate to try to give positive feedback. And again, that would be both good and or bad if it was refused, if they'll let you. And in the rare chance, one in 10,000 or whatever, that the change you were going to ask for doesn't happen and there's refusals continue, it is time to have that different conversation. We would not recommend, I don't have specific data on this. I've never had this conversation before 7 refusals. That's my general rule about all this sort of stuff. The pattern is 7. And I've learned I used to have a pattern of 5. And I discovered when I taught a pattern of 5, And there was some science behind that, why five was a good number, because the vast majority of people know that five have occurred. But I discovered when I chose five, people shortened that as a matter of urgency to three. And then we had problems because there was not a pattern after three. And there needs to be a pattern. And so I have found that seven seems to be the magic number. So we wouldn't recommend you get to this point with, you know, without seven, but I actually would tell most of you 10. In other words, be patient. Now, I'm not saying you should only be trying to give feedback once a week, and so it'll take 10 weeks. I would say the moment you start getting worried at three or four, start trying to give more feedback so you'll have enough refusals, if they continue, within 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. You can't let somebody go 3 months with this kind of refusal. It's part of their core obligation to the organization.
All right, folks, we'll stop there. We're at 37 minutes or so, so we'll finish this up next week. And I swear this will be the last one. Next week will be the last one of the series. So in the meantime, have a great one, folks. So long.